The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Oh, hi. Before we start the show, it's time for this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. March is all about Easter and Passover at BubbleGenius.com. Head on over to Bubble Genius and pick up their My Ass Hurts Easter gift bag. It's a basket filled with Easter candy-shaped soaps. One bunny's lost his ears, the other bunny's got his tail bitten off. Hence the joke. All rendered in vegan soap. You even get magnificent pastel eggs and flower soaps. Only $15 at BubbleGenius.com, but if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's BOBANDCHEZ, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let's start the show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You know, Hank, I was just wondering why you say that Hey Now thing.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just something that you used on the show, and now you're starting to use it in your personal life, and it's an affectation of some sort, isn't it? Did you ever say, hey, now, as a kid?
No, I don't. I probably didn't.
Uh-huh.
I said, hey.
Yeah.
And I said, now.
Right, at different times.
I never put them together till later in life.
Uh-huh.
So, in that sense, it's part of my personality.
You know, Hank, this isn't easy for me, but would you mind not doing it on the show anymore? Because, frankly, I'll tell you the truth.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that when you do this, that isn't the same affectation? That isn't the same as my, hey now?
There, you just said it again. And, you know, I asked you not to say it.
I can't say it off stage either?
It doesn't even exist. Use hey now in a sentence, Hank.
Hey now, that was real funny.
You know what, Hank? It's not even in the dictionary, hey now.
Okay, this is how I use hey now in a sentence, okay? You say, and of course, my sidekick, Hank.
And of course, my sidekick, Hank.
Hey now!
Hank.
That's a sentence.
No. Hank, listen. I just prefer you not do it on the show anymore, okay? I just, it gets on my nerves, it gets on the audience's nerves as well.
No, sir.
Hank.
Look, you're not out there. And believe me, it's very big with the audience. No. And I'm going to tell you something else. I think it helps make the show work. It's part of our whole interplay on camera.
By interplay, you mean the times we're both awake?
Hey, now.
The best music on the best station.
Okay, now, you see this gentleman? Now, he's giving me this this sign, and it says, we're on in 10 seconds, so get ready to have a good time. All right, here we go. This is exciting, isn't it?
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It is Thursday, March 24, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Right there.
Hey there.
Hey now. We should make a note of...
If I had gotten any sleep at all last night, I would have been quicker on the draw with that. That's a thing to say. It took my brain just a second to process that, because I'm so damn tired today.
And then we ended up saying it at the same time. We should avoid doing that in the future. All right, we are brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap ever. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen, best lawyer ever. If you want free legal advice, go to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez, or just click the link in the podcast page. Hey now. All right. Obviously, I want to spend a little bit of time here at the top of the show talking about Gary Shandling, which the announcement of his untimely death at age 66 just came down right before we started the show. And I know it's not political, and it's not something we normally talk about on this show. It's more of an after party kind of thing. But I think the very fact that we do a show, I think in some way relates to Gary Shandling, insofar as the Larry Sanders Show on HBO, even more so than Gary Shandling's original show, The Gary Shandling Show, or it's Gary Shandling Show. was extraordinarily influential when it comes to my career. I mean, I'll never forget just starting in radio, still in college, and seeing the Larry Sanders Show for the first time, and just for whatever reason, because it didn't paint a pretty picture of late night television.
No, it's a brilliant show.
It was a brilliant show. One of the funniest shows, maybe the funniest show, maybe next to Mary Tyler Moore, maybe the funniest show about television ever made. And it was, even though it was a grim look at late night television in most respects, I still wanted that. I mean, my 20, 21 year old self just desperately wanted to be, just to have his own talk show. I wanted a show like the Larry Sanders Show, the actual show within the show.
So you were Rupert Pupkin in your basement.
I was Rupert Pupkin. That's exactly right. Pretending to do the show in my basement and with my mom yelling down at me, lower it. Right. And, the Larry Sanders Show was so inventive and so interesting. It was sort of that fake documentary style, this sort of the mockumentary style before the mockumentary style became super popular. Maybe, I guess with the UK version of The Office, some 5 or 6 years after the Larry Sanders Show went off the air on HBO. Yeah. And, the real shame of it is, I went back to HBO Go to check and see if I could see any old Larry Sanders Show episodes, and HBO Go doesn't even have that show in its menu. I don't know what's going on with the rights to that show, because even the DVD releases have been few and far between. I think there was one DVD release of the best of the Larry Sanders Show, and then I think there's a season one. I'm glancing over at my shelves full of DVDs, and I'm noticing I've got the best of and the season one, and so. It's one of those shows that you really want to have as a document of not only that period of time, but also of what it was like to be in television, especially in the 1990s. Yeah. And it was all about Gary Shandling's extraordinarily insightful view of television egos. And one of the greatest episodes of television, not just of that show, but across the board in all of television, this is an episode of television that I go back to maybe on a weekly basis. When I see really pure, undistilled delusion on display, whether it's in politics or in media, I always think of the episode in which Hank Kingsley, played by Jeffrey Tambor, takes over the show for one night because Gary Shandling is sick and they can't find a replacement. And Jeffrey Tambor goes on that night as the host of the show, and he's really uncomfortable, but he kind of finds his groove and he ends up doing really, really well. Yeah. And then Gary Shandling, as Larry Sanders, predicts that the fact that that Hank did so well on the show is going to turn him into a major, major a-hole, even beyond what he was before. And of course, that's exactly what happened. And it's one of the greatest episodes of television ever, mainly because it emphasizes what it means to have this overinflated sense of self-importance. And while Gary Shandling's character is very much like that, Hank Kingsley, Jeffrey Tambor's character, was the greatest. I mean, one of the great comedic sidekicks in the history of television, easily, because he was so full of shit. And that not only made him lovable, but also completely insufferable. And, I was noticing on, I posted a thing about it on Facebook about Gary Shandling's death. And one of our most loyal listeners, Amy Taylor, commented about Hank's Look Around Cafe, which was Hank Kingsley's restaurant that he built, that he invested in and put together on the show. And it was one of those rotating restaurants that you normally find like at the top of a building with glass windows all over the place, so you can get this 360-degree view of the cityscape and the whole landscape and the view and everything. And instead, he put this rotating restaurant just inside a restaurant, no view whatsoever. Yeah. Look Around Cafe. I was just like, oh man.
I was always my favorite was always Artie.
Yes, of Artie, course. Of course. And you could relate to that, right?
Oh, yeah. But we used to, me and a friend of mine, one of my best friends, used to have There was a line that we borrowed from the show all the time, and I have no idea why. It was just funny, and it stuck with us. And it's been so long since I've seen it, I can't remember the actual context of it. But I know that it's I think they're at a party, or Larry says something about, you know, like the problem with Artie is that he's always making all these drinks with salt in them. And they just smash cut to Artie, and he goes, "It's called a salty dog. Drink it, you p-."
That's right, the salty dog. The
salty dog. And we used to say that all the time.
That's right.
It's a salty dog. Drink it, you p-.
That's right. Because there's so much salt in it that the olive floats at the top of the drink.
Yeah.
That was the joke.
Salty dog.
Here's a clip that we usually play on the show. This is Rip Torn playing Artie, the executive producer of the Larry Sanders Show, heckling Hank.
I'll show you. Heckle me. Go ahead.
Listen, I'm very busy and I got a sore throat.
Come on. Heckle me. Come on. Don't worry. Hit me hard.
Get off the stage, you fucking moron. I've taken shit more interesting than you are. You're not but Larry Sanders' personal fuck bitch. So shut your fucking fat face and get your goddamn bloated ass off the stage, motherfucker!
Oh, Jesus, Artie.
Good comeback.
Oh, man. So, again, the mastermind of that show, Gary Shandling, just made it endlessly interesting, endlessly hilarious, and one of the most groundbreaking shows on television. And then after it went off the air, right around the same time Seinfeld went off the air, it was a terrible kind of year for great, great shows just ending. And I think that was 1997, 1998, when it went off the air. And then Gary Shandling kind of just disappeared. Yeah. Didn't really do anything after that. Well, maybe did some...
That's because he became a congressman and an agent for Hydra.
That's right.
Hail Hydra.
I've been seeing that going around, too. Yes. And, he actually, from what I understand, went off and was just doing a lot of boxing. He was just, like, really into, like, training to be a boxer, even though he was... I don't think he was ever going to actually be a boxer, but that was his fitness routine. Like, he would just, you know, go off to the gym and box people. He would just go off and fist fight people, which I thought was kind of funny. And then I guess one of his last appearances publicly was on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. This is the most recent season with Jerry Seinfeld. Well, and I haven't seen that one yet. I haven't seen that particular interview come down yet. But I do think that there's another interview with Jerry Seinfeld at some point earlier than that I thought was also really entertaining. But again, but relating back to what it is we do here, you can't really do a show, regardless of whether it's a comedy show, a late night show, a news show, or even a whatever we call this show, without referencing back to the Larry Sanders Show, and that being somewhat of a cultural touchstone for the sorts of things that go on, not only on the show, but behind the scenes with egos. And I'll never forget. I mean, at that time, when I was first watching the Larry Sanders Show, I was interning for the Don and Mike Show, the nationally syndicated Don and Mike Show. So there were so many things that I would see on the Larry Sanders Show that I would actually then start to observe, as I'm sure you did too, Chaz, working in television news as an executive producer, that would happen on that show that would actually happen in real life. Like,
sure.
Like the weird egos of the talent and don't make direct eye contact, and they're very fragile in some cases and insecure, and you have to kind of dance around that. It was all a big dance around the different egos. This is what I discovered most from dealing with really popular syndicated type personalities, and of course that was on display on the Larry Sanders Show as well. So, but it's a shame to see Gary Shandling go at such a young age. They don't know yet what the cause of death was. No one said that he was particularly sick from anything. He wasn't battling some sort of illness. Although I did notice, and I don't think anyone could have helped but not notice, that he was kind of looking weird recently. I don't know if anyone, I don't know if you noticed that, Jeff, but he was looking.
I actually chalked that up to cosmetic surgery.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that or maybe it was, I'm sure it was a little bit of that because Gary Shandling was notoriously insecure about his looks. And
yeah,
I
chalked up, he had the very stretched face.
Yeah, the stretched and puffy face. So maybe some face work there and then some filler or whatever, Botox, whatever else gets pumped into the face like that. But I mean, who knows? It could have been something else that he was kind of keeping on the down low just to remain private. And I think it was still quite private. In fact, while I was living in Hawaii, it was always sort of common knowledge that, Gary Shandling's in town. Because he would always go to the Four Seasons in Kona. And in fact, he on the Larry Sanders Show, the character Larry Sanders would always talk about going to the Four Seasons in Kona. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of weird knowing that, there Larry Sanders is over there. He's shopping at the Safeway. Oh, is he? Oh, great. Okay. And so, or no, did I say Larry Sanders? I meant Gary Shandling.
Yes.
Anyway.
It's tough to confuse.
Yeah. So I remember when that show first came out, everyone was, well, it's the Larry Sanders Show starring Gary Shandling. What the hell does that even mean? Mm-hmm. So that's it. And thank you again for indulging us as we talk about Gary Shandling. But I mean, again, he's one of these iconic celebrities that when they go, it's kind of shocking. It was like James Gandolfini or, to me, Robin Williams or any of these other celebrities that you never expect. You never expect them to actually pass away. And when they do, it's a big shock. And so that's why we're taking a little bit of time to talk about it here. But we're going to get into politics. Of course we are. By the way, speaking of late night television, we might as well just shoehorn this in. Letterman's looking kooky these days, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he looks... yeah, wow. He looks like he's joined a militia.
That's exactly right. It was kind of shocking because you sent me that picture via email the other day.
He looks like nothing like himself. Nothing. Like there's, I can't, if I were standing there talking to him on the street, I would probably never guess it was him.
Yeah. He's like, if you haven't seen the picture yet, he's basically bald. His hair is shaved way, way down. And then he's got a big, giant, bushy beard.
He's the Yellow King. He's the Yellow King from the first season of True Detective.
Exactly. Yes.
The guy riding the lawnmower.
Yes, exactly. He's the villain from the first season of True Detective. That's exactly right. He's got the big, long beard. And evidently, the big, long beard is sort of like a billboard for Letterman's weird insecurities. Like he talked about that they quoted him in this article about how, you know, he just decided when he went off television that he just was going to stop shaving. Yeah. Why? Because he can't stand to look himself in the mirror.
Yeah, he has some very serious insecurities, which, by the way, is what makes him such a great performer.
Yeah. And of course,
that sort of counterintuitively is what makes him so good. And a lot of the best, certainly the best comedic talents, but a lot of the best broadcasters, one of the reasons why they're so difficult to work with and they're so insufferable is that they have that issue with insecurity.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was going to ask you this question. And if you could be as successful as Letterman, but be racked with so much self-hatred and insecurity, would you do it?
Probably, because I've already kind of got that. And at least I'd like to be able to sit on like several million dollars.
Yeah, that's true.
However many hundreds of millions of dollars he has.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I can't tell. I guess up until recently, I never got the impression that Letterman was a happy guy off the air.
No, he's not. He's never been happy. He's always been a miserable bastard. This is what, this is what I've heard anyway.
Yeah.
And I think it's obviously a big issue for him. But I mean, it fed into his, for lack of a better term, his art. I mean, it made him who he was, why he was so yeah. good at what he did.
Well, the interesting thing is a lot of us who do this kind of work, and I'm certainly not comparing what we do to what Letterman did, but having a public persona, doing a show where you kind of, you're directly putting your thoughts and emotions and feelings and observations out there for public consumption. There's obviously a level of insecurity that goes along with that. I think to a certain extent, we're all kind of seeking out that approval for whatever reason, whatever sure. Freudian reasons, whatever psychological reasons that we need that. But that was something that, going back to Gary Shandling, that was something that Gary Shandling really, really tapped into extraordinarily well with the Larry Sanders Show. And it was built off of, I think, observing two very specific people, and it was Johnny Carson and David Letterman.
Yeah, it's a cringe thing. It's an ability to allow yourself to add the cringe factor to something.
Yeah,
to purposely make yourself and the audience uncomfortable.
Right, and it's this.
You wear your neuroses on your sleeve.
And it really is a deal with the devil, because the more you do this, the more you do this kind of thing to assuage your insecurities, it's funny, the more insecure you end up becoming. And so you end up, it's like, be careful what you wish for kind of thing, because the more you do it, you know, I guess some people have always been able to find inner peace and be happy. I don't know if I would necessarily trade, going back to my original question, I don't know if I would necessarily trade being happy for all of that success. I'm not saying that I'm across the board thrilled and always happy, but, you know, just putting myself in Letterman's shoes, I don't know that I would want that, because clearly he's a guy now who just, he's out of F's to give. He has no,
sure.
I mean, really, no more F's to give. In fact, he said in that article that every time someone hectors him about shaving his beard, it makes him not want to shave his beard even more.
Yeah, so. I mean, I don't think it would be possible for me to let myself go, maybe not at any point,
yeah,
to the length that he has.
Yeah, right.
To the extent that he has. To just say, oh, you know what, f*** it, I give up.
Exactly. All right, so we're going to get into some politics after we talk about, we're going to talk about Harry's Razors, of course. And why not? Because David Letterman certainly isn't buying Harry's Razors right now. But he should be. If he ever decides to shave his beard, he'll get a clean, close shave with Harry's Razors. For months now, I'm getting a fantastic shave. The sting is gone. No more razor burn. As well as the sting of those big name prices. You know, those expensive razors that are locked behind those protective walls of glass. $32? Are you kidding me? For replacement blades? Do what I and over a million others have done, men and women alike. Make the switch to shaving products from Harry's.com. Harry started 3 years ago this month, and they saw the insanity of blade prices, so they just bought a factory in Germany that's been making precision blades for over a century. And now the blades go right to you from that factory with no middleman. Absolutely no middleman. That's how Harry's took the sting out of blades. Now, imagine getting the same great razors that I use, three of those sweet five-blade cartridges, moisturizing shave cream, and more for just $15 with a money-back satisfaction guarantee. Stand up against overpriced store-bought blades and their protective glass display cases with Harry's Razors. And don't forget, ladies, Harry's is perfect for your legs and your armpits. Go to harrys.com, enter the promo code BNC, B-A-N-D-C, for $5 off your first Harry shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs with Harry's Razors. That's HARRYS.com.
The Bob and Jez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, welcome back to our Thursday show. Come around. And thank you for indulging us as we talked about Gary Shandling and late night television. Gary Shandling dead at 66 years old. It's only about 20 years older than I am. And I was thinking back to the Larry Sanders Show. This is the last I'm going to say about this. When the Larry Sanders Show was on the air, Gary Shandling was roughly our age, Jess.
Yeah.
That means...
Imagine that.
Death is right around the corner.
It is. It's going to be for me anyway.
Jesus Christ. Don't
I'm
say
shocked
that.
I lasted this long. I lived a good portion of my life sort of banking on not living to a certain point. And yeah. When I got there, I was just like, what the hell do I do now? Like, I ingested all these chemicals, and the point was kind of like, well, it's all right. You know, you're not going to live long anyway. Now what do I do?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't lived as hard and fast as you have, necessarily, but I still have that weird premonition. I don't know what it is, but I still get that weird feeling sometimes. Like, I just can't envision myself being an old man. You know, it's funny. I finally got to watch the new documentary out called "Brainwashing of My Father." It's about
Is that?
The documentary itself is really good. It's a little bit like homegrown looking. It's a little bit rough around the edges, production value wise, and it gets a little slow. It's right before sort of the third act begins around there. But overall, it was really fascinating to get an encapsulated view. And again, it never hurts to refresh your memory in terms of how things like Fox News Channel and AM talk radio came to be. And with a special focus in this documentary on Roger Ailes and creating this cult-like atmosphere with conservative media that sucked otherwise reasonable people into its bubble and never let go. And I'm not going to spoil it, but the documentarian who made this film, her dad went through the same process, was a Democrat, was a fun guy, was an easygoing guy.
Yeah, a guy who didn't have anything against any particular type of race or, yep, or ethnicity or sexual orientation.
Yeah, exactly. And then he ended up starting to listen to Rush Limbaugh and became addicted to Rush Limbaugh. He became so addicted to right-wing talk radio that he actually moved out of the same room with his wife into a guest room so he could continue to listen to the radio all night long, which is evidently, you know, according to all of the people who reported in, because the documentarian who made this movie raised the money through a Kickstarter and then was hearing from thousands of people, yeah, whose father or mother, depending on the case, went through the exact same thing and experienced this exact same symptoms and the exact same media personalities flooding their households, turning their lives into these universes of misery. It was just like really, really bad. Like their family members became obsessed with Fox News Channel and AM talk radio to the point where they could think of nothing else. And then as soon as they begin to turn off the radio and as soon as they stop watching Fox News Channel and are exposed to, for example, in the case of this film, spoiler, the documentarian's mother got into her dad's email and started signing him up for, or unsubscribing him to some of the right-wing newsletters and signing him up for some more left-leaning newsletters, just clandestinely. Right. And so he started reading that, and that sort of broke him of this brainwashing. It sort of brought him back to reality.
Right, because that's basically what Fox News does. I mean, and that's what the right does. Their sort of infotainment complex, they operate under a kind of the way that propaganda operates, in that it teaches you, look, you know what, you have to be back here first thing tomorrow morning. Like, you know, this is the only network you can trust. The lamestream media, they're not covering the real stories. We've got it here, and you can't trust anyone else. And I've told this story before, but I swear it bears repeating because it shows you how there were even people at CNN who didn't quite get it. But I had this conversation with Carol Costello one time, and she couldn't figure out how it was that Fox News had such astonishing ratings. And I'm like, because they don't serve up, they don't provide news. They provide Fox News.
Yeah.
And it's a brand that people are looking for. They don't turn to Fox News looking for news. They turn to Fox News looking for this specific kind of information. And if you are a Fox News viewer, you're somebody, you know, if you watch CNN, you're somebody who watches CNN 15 minutes at a time, 20 minutes at a time, an hour, maybe an hour a day. Mm-hmm. If you're somebody who watches Fox News, you don't turn the channel off.
Yeah.
You watch all day. And when you want your news, you don't go anywhere else. You are religiously addicted to Fox News and their message.
Exactly. And it's one of the most pervasive and effective propaganda campaigns in the history of media. And the way Fox News specifically was able to get away with all of this is not just by putting on personalities like Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, guys with confidence and big egos who could sell these ideas, but also, and this wasn't necessarily covered in the documentary, but it's certainly something that David Brock and other media critics have written about, is that the way Fox News selects its opinion-free news stories even have a tinge of opinion to them. So it's like they're only picking news stories that feed a conservative narrative, even though those news stories individually are read with a straight tone of voice, with no opinion. They're designed in a way and constructed in a way to present an overall conservative worldview.
Yes, of course.
Without actually screaming into the television. And that's what happened once Fox and Friends goes off the air and before the five starts at 5 o'clock. Everything in between is some level of that. Like, we're pitching a thought of the day, and everything that we report on today, even the straight news, contributes to that thought of the day.
And it all comes down from the top. They are the only network that where that happens.
Yeah, and
where the producers know the producers know what they're expected to do. Even, first of all, even if they aren't told to, but they are told to.
Yeah.
They're told, look, you know what? The edicts come down from on high. Here are the questions we need to be asking. Here's, you know, isn't it interesting that this, you know, they kind of, you know, plant that little seed, mm-hmm. and the producers getting their paychecks from Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch and Fox News know what they then have to do.
Yeah. They were, the people who built Fox News Channel, and specifically, as you said, Roger Ailes, what they are experts at is tapping into the whimsy of the masses, and they figured out how to just worm their way into the brains of the masses and manipulate them into believing this. And one of the main things that they got people to believe was that straight news reporting, the news media at large, is somehow is presenting a liberal bias, even though news, by and large, I mean, you take Hearst's yellow journalism and you set that aside as sort of its own thing. But news reporting, by and large, in the 20th century was all about reporting as factually as possible. Now, certainly the editorial pages had all kinds of ideas and opinions. There were more liberal newspapers in each town, more conservative newspapers in each town. But the news itself was always pushed through a very hard and fast prism that made sure that accuracy was the main thing, even to the detriment of making money. As you know, Chez, like news organizations for decades were always on the verge of collapsing financially because they didn't present necessarily what people wanted to hear. They presented what was the facts and what was reality. And Roger Ailes, beginning with the Nixon years, because you know, Roger Ailes was a television advisor to Richard Nixon, advised Richard Nixon, well, here, what we're going to do is we're going to demonize this straight news reporting as being liberally biased. And they convinced people systematically over many years, and then, of course, culminating with the repeal of the Fairness Doctrine and the rise of Fox News Channel in the late 90s, that really locked it into place. Like, there's this liberal media bias, and we're here to counter it. So what it's done, the entire conservative media movement, the entire conservative entertainment complex is built on fiction, which therefore makes it, in and of itself, a version of fiction. If you're responding to fiction and building your entire movement on fiction, there's nothing there to build it on. Yeah. And so the conservative media is reacting something to something that doesn't even exist. It's like Dan Bedani and Alex Jones reacting to conspiracies that aren't even really there. So it makes them sound ridiculous if you're looking at it from the outside. If you're on the inside, the way it's crafted, it's like a really great amusement park sucking you in to get you to go to all the right rides and buy all the right concessions and everything like that. It's all psychologically designed to manipulate as many people as possible, and it's been fantastically successful at doing that. And I don't know what's going to turn it around. Certainly, if you read the new Banter magazine, which should be out as we speak, I took some time to talk about how the idea of generating a liberal version of a progressive version of that is the wrong way to go. Because what we have seen through the conservative entertainment complex is the rise of Donald Trump. And we see the rise, basically, the early stages of the disintegration of the Republican Party. Because of the idea of legitimizing the Tea Party and building a movement upon, a foundation of sand instead of a foundation of reality. And so we don't want the progressive movement to do the same thing. So the whatever propaganda that we're seeing out there coming from the left, and you can read about that in the Banter magazine, it's got to stop. It's got to stop.
Yeah, and by the way, the Banter, for those of you who do, I would highly suggest getting the Banter magazine this week because apparently it turned out, without any of us attempting to, it's basically going to be the all beating up on the far left, the emo progs, the Bernie Sandersites.
Yeah.
It's going to be basically all of that.
Yes, it's going to be really... really worth reading. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to get into, speaking of all this crap, the Trump versus Cruz versus Heidi versus Melania controversy from this week, right after this. Okay, let's talk about supporting independent media. For only $1 a month, you can help finance the Bob and Chez Show at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's 12 cents per per show. Go now to patreon.com/Bob and Chez. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez. And sign up for $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, or $15 a month, or whatever you can afford. If you sign up for $5 or more, you'll get special Patreon-only shows like our post-mortem wrap-up show, the Not Safe for Work after-party show, and commercial-free, unbleeped versions of the free Tuesday and Thursday shows. Most of all, you'll be supporting a totally independent podcast not affiliated with corporate media. And if we reach our $7,500 per month goal, we'll bring you new shows 5 days a week, Mondays through Fridays. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Okay, do me a big favor. Go to bobseska.com right now, unless you're driving your car. If you're in your car, don't do it. For God's sake, don't do it. But when you get home and you have your handheld device there, or you're on your computer, go to bobseska.com and help support my friend and colleague, J.M. Ashby, who is one of the last remaining unpaid bloggers in the world. Yeah. He doesn't make a goddamn thing for blogging every damn day at bobseska.com. And so he's doing a fundraiser right now. So go and support him at bobseska.com. You can't miss it. He'll be various headlines. If you scroll down, it's a spring fundraiser, day 1, 2, 3, etc. Click in there and click the jolly candy-like PayPal button and support J.M. Ashby's blogging efforts. Okay. Now, moving along to the dumbest goddamn story of the week, which is also one of the more compelling stories from a really stupid perspective. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are going after each other, specifically going after each other's wives.
It's basically going to turn into a key party at any moment.
So what happened was a group that's not even affiliated.
Wait, before you even say anything, okay, Let's pause for just a second.
Okay.
To appreciate what we're seeing, what we're about to talk about. Okay. We're about to talk about the two front, basically the number one and number two for the Republican nomination for President of the United States, mm-hmm, and they are on Twitter going after each other's wives.
Yes, the two ostensible leaders of the Republican Party right now.
Yeah. I mean, no, you know what? Actually, I'll take that back, because let's be fair. Actually, it's just Trump.
Yeah.
It's just Trump going after Heidi Cruz, because, and this is, somebody said this earlier today, and it's totally true. The idea that Trump can make Ted Cruz look classy is, mm-hmm, just staggering.
Yeah.
It's just staggering to me.
Yeah. And you know what? It's hard to take Ted Cruz seriously. It's hard to believe what he says, but believe it or not, in this situation, I'm kind of thinking that Ted Cruz is right on this. First of all,
oh, he's totally right.
Yeah. I mean, what happened was there was a Facebook ad that came out made by an anti-Trump super PAC that's not connected to Ted Cruz in any way, shape, or form. It's called, what is it called? Make America Awesome?
Make America Awesome. Yes, apparently the chairman is Jeff Spicoli.
Yeah. You.
So the little Facebook meme that was released showed a picture of Melania from a GQ photo shoot. With her naughty parts blurred out, even though, or what were they? No, I don't think.
No,
they
no,
were.
No. It was semi-nude.
Yeah, and so Donald Trump didn't like that, and so he tweeted, "Lion Ted Cruz just used a picture of Melania from a GQ shoot in his ad. Be careful, Lion Ted, or I will spill the beans on your wife."
With an exclamation point, because he loved those.
Right, and then of course Cruz replied, pick of your wife, not from us. Donald, if you try to attack Heidi, you're more of a coward than I thought. Hashtag classless. And then today, Donald Trump tweeted a picture of Heidi Cruz looking just terrible. It was a terrible picture of Heidi Cruz. I don't know if it was photoshopped or what, but that's the back and forth. They're ranking each other's wives. The Republican frontrunners are ranking wives. That's,
I mean, look at that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that calls to everyone's attention again, the fact that Donald Trump is a honestly, look, you know what? I've made the argument before that these days the word misogynist gets thrown around a little too much.
Yeah.
It's become interchangeable with sexist. Mm-hmm. Misogynist is someone who genuinely just kind of hates women. And I think that that qualifies. I think that Trump is absolutely a misogynist. He is. He's just, you know, the classic male chauvinist pig, you know, the classic guy who just... He just thinks women are basically, you know, and he can brag about his sexual conquests and they're only good to have sex with and they need to shut up and have his babies and he pays for them and that's it.
Well, the question too is...
And if they're ugly, they're worthless.
The other thing is that there's little or no reason to believe that Donald Trump has anything to spill the beans about with regard to Heidi Cruz. He's just making that up. He doesn't have anything. But I wonder if, on some level, it's making Cruz supporters go, well, I wonder what he's got. Does he have something?
Oh, what's sure, of course. Lady?
Yeah. So, because, you know, he could make something
supposedly
up.
Supposedly, the story is, and this is an apocryphal story. That's the thing. Supposedly, the story is that at one point, this is what they think he might be alluding to. At some point years ago, the police were called, and Heidi Cruz was sitting outside of her car on the side of the road, and was just kind of not able to drive and not able to do anything. And she was taken by the police to, taken to the police station or something like that. And it turned out, you know, I think Ted Cruz, maybe it's not apocryphal, I think Ted Cruz actually addressed it. He said that, you know, for a while there, she suffered from depression.
Yeah.
Which, that's kind of reasonable behavior if you suffer from depression. Actually, what pissed me off about it as somebody who does suffer from depression was he said the rest of his comment acknowledging that that's what this was like million. I think he said something like millions of other people. She got through it through church prayer, a love of God. And I'm like, no,
it doesn't work like
douche. It doesn't work.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Talk about setting back the movement to support mental health in this country.
Yeah. Jesus. Millions of people don't do that.
It is an illness like cancer or diabetes. It needs to be treated as such. It's not something that you can just pray away. This is just absolutely ridiculous about it.
That's it. That's it. Exactly. Yeah. The idea that you can pray away depression is just, God, like you said, that's setting back medicine and culture and acceptance of depression by light years.
And by the way, it's not 1968 anymore. You're not going to get someone to drop, or what was it, 1972 when Muskie dropped out because the Nixon campaign, you know, sort of floated the idea that he had electroshock therapy. Yeah. Just like, oh, God damn it. You know what? What are we building a bridge to 1972? Is that what we're doing now? It's like mental health is suddenly like this issue that disqualifies candidates, even though it's their wife. That happens to be the case. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And this is something that I think the Republican Party needs to take accountability for at some point. And speaking of that, when we come back, we're not only going to play, we're going to play this audio. I think you circulated on Facebook today, Chez, about comparing Donald Trump to Barack Obama on women, talking about the language they use when talking about women. And then also, Paul Ryan delivered what was an astonishing speech to me. I think it was yesterday, about makers versus takers. And it's really worth listening to just for the actual accountability. We're going to do that right after a short break, back after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
We'll be right back.
Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Oh, yes, it is. Welcome back. Okay, there's this video going around online right now. Pick it up, and it's comparing Barack Obama to Donald Trump, specifically about how they speak about women. And it's extremely salient in terms of just one-to-one contrast between, to me, one of the most dignified, disciplined chief executives we've ever had, at least in modern history, at least within my memory. Certainly, I think you could make an historic comparison there as well across all presidents. But the fact is that Barack Obama, I think, is going to be sorely missed, not only by the left, but also by some elements of the, you know, I would say more moderate elements of the Republican Party as well. Right. They're not going to say it out loud, but when the next president comes along, be it Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or whoever, they're going to go, Jesus, I wish we had that guy back. Even though I disagreed with him about blah, 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 blah. This is a Republican talking. Even though, he's too liberal for me, yada, 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 yada. At least he was dignified about how he handled himself in the presidency. Yeah. Maybe I'm just thinking wishfully here, but I think that might be the case. But here's this audio in which you can really hear firsthand the difference between Donald Trump, basically the leader of the Republican Party right now, versus the leader of the Democratic Party right now, Barack Obama.
The idea that my daughters wouldn't have the same opportunities as somebody's sons? Well, that's unacceptable. That's not acceptable.
I mean, we could say politically correct that the look doesn't matter, but the look obviously matters. Like, you wouldn't have your job if you weren't beautiful.
We all have to be louder than the voices that are telling our girls they're not good enough, that they've got to look a certain way, or they've got to act a certain way.
You know who's one of the great beauties of the world, according to everybody, and I helped create her?
Who?
Ivanka. My daughter, Ivanka.
Yeah.
She's 6 feet tall. She's got the best body.
Yeah, she's hot.
I've got a vested interest in making sure that our daughters have the same opportunities as boys do.
A person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10, okay?
Yeah, I was raised by a single mom. And know what it was like for her to raise two kids and go to work at the same time and try to piece things together without a lot of support.
They said, how are you going to change the pageant? And I said, I'm going to get the bathing suits to be smaller and the heels to be higher.
Playing like a girl means you're a badass.
Ever been with a black woman?
Had to have. Yes.
When women of color aren't given the opportunity to live up to their God-given potential, we all lose out on their talents. We're not as good a country as we can be.
And you're going to have more kids?
I think so, yeah.
Really?
I believe it. Yeah, sure, I will.
What do you need that headache for?
Because I like kids. I mean, I won't do anything to take care of them. I'll supply the funds and she'll take care of the kids, right?
We have to do better because women deserve better. And by the way, when women do well, everybody does well.
Yep. There it is. And half of women, I think, are going to end up. Well, I would say maybe 40% of all women voters this November will probably cast a ballot for the Republican candidate for some reason.
Mm.
Not exactly sure why, but there it is. Okay, so moving along here. I mean, we've been talking about Republican accountability for quite some time now, specifically with regards to the ascension of Donald Trump. And there was one Republican this week. I've been calling Donald Trump the head of the Republican Party, but in terms of the head of the congressional Republicans, Paul Ryan actually kind of took one for the team this week. And by team, I mean all Americans, by holding himself accountable and apologizing for the whole makers versus takers thing. This was, just to refresh your memory, this is Paul Ryan just 6 years ago, circa 2010, talking about makers and takers on Fox Business.
60% of Americans receive more in benefits from the government than they actually pay in taxes. What's the threat from that?
Well, the threat from that is we could become a nation with a majority of takers and a minority of makers. And the threat to that is we transition away from the traditional American idea of an entrepreneurial economy based upon limited government and free enterprise and move over toward sort of a Western European style, cradle-to-grave social welfare state where the majority of people are dependent on the government for their very livelihoods. And what that ends up doing is it saps us of our creativity, of our entrepreneurial economy, of our prosperity. We have slow growth, and we actually take people and turn them into people who are more dependent on the government, and that drains them of their incentive and will to make the most of their lives. The point I try to make with this tipping point, or the choice of two futures in front of us, is do you want to have an opportunity society with a safety net, or do you want to switch over to this cradle-to-grave welfare state where we have a culture of dependency, slow growth, lower living standards, and less prosperity? That's really sort of the choice that's before us.
Okay, there you go. That was Paul Ryan in 2010. This is Paul Ryan yesterday, March 23rd, 2016.
If someone has a bad idea, well, why don't we tell them why our idea is better? We don't insult them into agreeing with us. We try to persuade them. We test their assumptions. And while we're at it, we test our own assumptions too. You know, I'm certainly not going to stand here and tell you that I have always met this standard myself. There was a time that I would talk about a difference between makers and takers in our country, referring to people who accepted government benefits. But as I spent more time listening, really learning the root causes of poverty, I realized something. I realized that I was wrong. Takers wasn't how to refer to a single mom stuck in a poverty trap, trying to take care of her own family. Most people don't want to be dependent. And to label a whole group of Americans that way was wrong. I shouldn't castigate a large group of Americans just to make a point. So I stopped talking about it that way. And I stopped thinking about it that way. But I didn't come out and say this to be politically correct. I say this because I was just wrong.
Hey, that's pretty great.
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah. And the when I first heard that audio, the thing that jumped out at me was the fact that he used the phrase poverty traps. This is something that the conservative movement and the Republican Party fails time and time again to truly understand with their pick them up by the bootstraps kind of idea. Take your personal responsibility for your own life and do something about it. Go out and get a job, get a haircut and get a job. All that crap that we've been hearing year after year after year after year. And he actually acknowledged the fact that there are such a thing as poverty traps, where you get locked into a way of life that is unsustainable, and it's impossible, impossible in so many cases to break yourself out of it. Maybe it involves drugs. Maybe it involves some sort of weird family life. Maybe you've been disowned by your parents and you don't have that safety net. You make a couple of bad decisions and you're down and out. Or you just, you know what? This happens. You just have bad luck. You've made all the right choices in your life, and luck just takes a giant crap all over your head. And then it start. Then the cycle begins, and you can't get out of it.
And it is a cycle, because being poor breeds being poor.
That's right. That's right.
It becomes everything. It becomes. There was that great article that was written a while back from the woman who was poor, and she talked about what it means to her. It's like, you know, all it takes when you're poor, all it takes is one thing to fail, and that starts all the dominoes, and they all fall.
Exactly. And now with,
you know, the car, she has an old cheap car. It doesn't work. She doesn't make it to work. She doesn't make it to work. She gets fired. She gets fired. She loses, you know, she can't feed her house. Yep. That's she can't feed her kids. That's the way it goes. That's the way the dominoes work.
And then, by the way, she can't vote, because the choice is between spending the last $30 in her pocket to feed her kids, or spending the last $30 in her pocket to drive five counties over to get a goddamn voter ID so she can vote in the next election, something that wasn't even a priority in the first place, and now it's five times harder and more expensive.
Exactly.
This has been going on since since Reagan declared war on the middle class. So, you know, 36 years ago or whatever it was. This has been going on for so long. And the whole idea of the middle class is that it offered a bridge. It offered a way out from poverty to a comfortable lifestyle, if not, you know, developing some form of wealth. But with the decline of the middle class, there's no longer that stepping stone. So people become, as Paul Ryan said, strangely enough, become locked into that poverty trap and can't break themselves out of it. Now, the question is, the big question of the day, should we trust what Paul Ryan is saying? Is Paul Ryan saying this because for some strategic purpose? Is Paul Ryan portending a Republican stab at trying to win over working class voters or something like that, just to screw them in the end? Say, well, we're your party, and then, oh, by the way, we're still stuck on supply side. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case at all, but I think it's definitely a breath of fresh air knowing that finally a conservative has taken the bold step that we rarely see of admitting being wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
About something as divisive. I mean, Makers versus Takers was a big effing deal, certainly in the 2012 election where Paul Ryan was the vice presidential nominee. And on through today, on through this current election, to actually say that, you know, I took the time to actually meet with, I mean, he actually had a Q&A with someone who was in a congressional hearing, in a senatorial hearing, with someone who was actually in poverty. And that, you know, and that turned him around.
The crappy thing about that, though, is that that goes back to that. The thing about Republicans where they don't give a crap until it happens to them.
That's
and
right.
In this case, it, not that it happens to them or someone in their family, but that they actually bother to speak to somebody.
Exactly.
You know, they're incapable of empathy that is not shoved in their face. Mm. That you know, they're incapable of empathy that isn't they're not forced to feel.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm really hesitant to trust Paul Ryan on this because he's done so much damage. I mean, remember, this guy's hero was Ayn Rand. And Ayn Rand was all about the Makers versus the Takers. And so for Paul Ryan to renounce Ayn Rand, well, you have to face that with a little bit of skepticism along with that breath of fresh air. So I'll be really interested to see whether or not the Republican Party, led by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, actually takes definitive measures legislatively to tackle this problem and to give the alleged takers, you know, a stepping stone to the middle class. Like Bernie Sanders is always talking about this.
Excuse me, I'm talking.
No, I'm finishing the show, Bernie. To actually offer that middle class stepping stone to some sort of comfortable lifestyle where they're no longer in that trap. All right, the post-mortem show is coming up next. Everything we didn't get to on the free show, sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chez at the $5 level if you want to listen to the post-mortem wrap-up show. And you can sign up at $10 for the after party, $15 for the commercial-free, not-safe-for-work version of this show. Go to patreon.com/Bob and Chez or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. We'll see you over there. Bye-bye, folks.